This is A-State Connections on KASU. I'm Jonathan Reeves, and welcome to the weekly segment called A-State Connections and Create at State, Making Connections That Count. This is the 99th podcast episode, and we are glad that you're along with us. You're going to hear a couple of presentations from the Create at State Virtual Symposium in April, as these presentations are from the College of Nursing and Health Professions at Arkansas State. First is Jenny Keller with a presentation, an examination of the alcohol screening rate within in-family practice settings.
The use of excessive alcohol is the third leading preventable death in the United States, according to the CDC. It is the leading cause of premature mortality, accounting for 1 in 10 deaths among working age adults in the United States. It is the fifth leading risk factor for premature death and disability in 2010. The cost of alcohol misuse carried a U.S. economic burden of approximately $249 billion in 2010. Some definitions I'd like to review. Unhealthy alcohol use defines a spectrum of behaviors to include risky drinking, alcohol use disorder, harmful alcohol use, abuse, or dependence. Alcohol use disorder attributed to 3.3 million deaths globally in 2010, with over 200 associated conditions, including chronic illnesses such as cardiomyopathy, hypertension, hepatitis, pancreatitis, stroke, esophageal varices, and gastritis. Some other alcohol-related acute deaths include motor vehicle accidents, drownings, child maltreatment, homicide, suicide, firearm-related fires, and poisonings. In 2001 alone, there were an estimated 2.3 million years of potential life lost due to excessive use of alcohol. To break down on a visual pie chart, government spending was accounted for $100.7 billion. Binge drinking, $191 billion. Underage drinking, $24.3 billion. And drinking during pregnancy, $5.5 billion. The United States Preventative Task Force recommends screening for unhealthy alcohol use in primary care settings in adults 18 years or older. This is now the standard for family providers. The purpose of this study is to identify the percentage rate of alcohol screening performed in adults 18 years or older in a family practice clinic in Northeast Arkansas. The population, after the IRB was accepted through Arkansas State University, and a letter of approval was received from the clinical director. The clinic electronic medical record program randomly selected 50 charts. A non-research retrospective chart review was performed. The patient's social history was reviewed in each file to determine if the alcohol use screening question was documented yes or no. Inclusion criteria was established patient at the multi-provider clinic. Age 18 years of age or older, male or female. The exclusion was under the age of 18 years of age. This clinic received an A+ because the results found that 94% of the charts reviewed had been screened for the use of alcohol. The United States Preventative Task Force has found adequate evidence that screening and providing brief intervention and referral to treatment has found to reduce alcohol consumption by an average of 17%. Some vital influences of this project include increasing knowledge, awareness, and importance of alcohol screening in the primary care setting to improve patient health care outcomes and decrease mortality rates. Globally, there's limited studies performed regarding the use of this. With the guidance and assistance of government agencies, public health and healthcare providers, a significant impact of the detrimental effects of alcohol misuse can be made.
That was Jenny Keller. Next is Taylor Long with Long's presentation, Aspirin Use for Primary Prevention of Cardiovascular Disease.
Cardiovascular diseases, or CVD, are the number one cause of death globally, with more than 17.9 million people dying from CVD in 2016. In Arkansas, heart disease is the leading cause of death, while cerebrovascular disease, or stroke, is the fourth leading cause of death. CVD includes a group of disorders affecting the heart and blood vessels, which include coronary heart disease, cerebrovascular disease, peripheral arterial disease, rheumatic heart disease, congenital heart disease, and deep vein thrombosis or pulmonary embolism. Primary risk factors for CVD include an advanced age, male gender, race or ethnicity, hyperlipidemia, hypertension, diabetes, and tobacco abuse. Many evidence-based studies have shown the addition of a low-dose daily aspirin can help to decrease the risk of CVD events by 17% in patients who are considered at an elevated risk. The United States Preventive Service Task Force recommends that adults aged 50 to 59 who have a 10-year risk for cardiovascular disease that is greater than 10% take a low-dose daily aspirin for primary prevention of CVD if they are not at an increased risk for bleeding, have a life expectancy of at least 10 years, and are willing to take aspirin daily for at least 10 years. Despite this recommendation, studies have shown that the national average of adults taking low-dose aspirin daily for primary prevention of CVD is only 30%. Here are some images on statistics involving cardiovascular diseases, as well as some risk factors. Objectives: the purpose of the study was to examine the percent of patients aged 50 to 59 at a rural Arkansas clinic taking a low dose or 81 milligram daily aspirin for primary prevention of cardiovascular disease in comparison to the national average of 30%. In determining this percentage of patients taking aspirin for primary prevention of CVD compared to the national average, providers will be able to see if their prescribing practices are at goal or if they need improvement compared with the rest of the nation. Methods: a retrospective chart review of 50 electronic medical records was completed at a rural family practice clinic in Arkansas. Information was collected and entered into the ASCVD Risk Estimator Plus to obtain a 10-year CVD risk. Information obtained included age, sex, race, blood pressure, last cholesterol level, history of diabetes, smoking status, and if the patient was on any antihypertensives. Mathematical calculations were then used to determine the percent of patients which had a greater than 10% 10-year CVD risk who had aspirin listed on their medication list. Population included males and females 50 to 59 years of age with a greater than 10% 10-year risk for CVD based on the ASCVD Risk Estimator Plus, who have visited the clinic between January 1st and November 30th, 2019. Exclusions included those who had a known history of CVD, those who were younger than 50 or older than 59, and who had less than a 10% 10-year risk for CVD. Findings: the percentage of patients taking aspirin for primary prevention of CVD at a rural clinic in Arkansas was 26%. Discussion and action plan: compared to the national average of 30%, the rural Arkansas clinic was 4% less in prescribing aspirin to patients with a greater than 10% 10-year risk for CVD. Limitations include an unknown risk for bleeding, as a higher bleeding risk is a contraindication for aspirin use, and the possibility of aspirin not being listed on their home medication list, as this can be purchased over the counter as well. Providers should be well educated on current recommendations to help reduce the risk of CVD, as it is the leading cause of death in the United States. However, aspirin is consistently underutilized. Most patients who are seen in the family practice setting have multiple risk factors that include obesity, diabetes, hypertension, and hyperlipidemia. More needs to be done to protect these patients. More than 70% of people with a 10-year CVD risk of greater than 10% were not on a daily low-dose aspirin, as recommended by the United States Preventive Services Task Force and supported by the American Diabetes Association, American College of Chest Physicians, American Heart Association, and the American College of Cardiology. This shows that there's room for improvement for the Rural Family Practice Clinic in Arkansas, as well as the rest of the nation. Further education should be given to prescribers on the use of aspirin for primary prevention of CVD.
And that was Taylor Long. Next presentation is from Philip Stokes, an analysis of the utilization of advanced directive by primary care providers and discussion of barriers to implementation.
According to the American Medical Association, an advance directive is a tool that allows patients to discuss their healthcare goals and treatments if they were not able to make decisions for themselves. Research has concluded only 36.7% of U.S. adults have an advance directive. Studies have shown that 80% of the older adults wish to talk to their primary care provider about advance directives, but only 7% have the discussion. The general practitioners found a lack of time, experience, and poor access to correct administrative requirements to be barriers for drafting and completing an advance directive. Another study found patients' barriers for advance directives to be lack of knowledge, inadequate understanding, and complexity of the document. The researchers identified three areas of intervention in the study which were providing educational information using various methods of delivery, computer-generated triggers for primary care providers to initiate the discussion, and inclusion of multidisciplinary professionals to deliver the content and clarify questions. The Medicare program spent $740.6 billion on healthcare in 2018, compared to the $710.2 billion in 2017. The Medicare program spent 40% of the $740.6 billion on hospital care in 2017. In 2019, the average household who was on Medicare spent $9,533 on healthcare, compared to $4,700 in 2012. In 2019, Medicare spent on average $9,304 on Arkansas residents, which is slightly lower than the national average. In 2014, 2.6 million American people died, of which 80% were Medicare recipients. Over half of the Medicare beneficiaries who died were 80 years of age or older. The average spending on descendants on Medicare in 2014 was $34,529 per person. Most of the Medicare spending on descendants was inpatient hospitalization, which came to the average of $17,574. This is more than three times the amount spent compared to survivors on Medicare. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services have produced guidelines that reimburse providers for having conversations about advanced care directives. This was put into place to provide an incentive for providers to initiate conversations with patients about advanced directives. Providers can use CPT codes 99497 and 99498 to be reimbursed. The relative value units, also known as RVUs, for the code 99497 is 2.4 with an estimated payment of $85.99. And the RVUs for the code 99498 is 2.09 with an estimated payment value of $74.88. The purpose of the Quality Improvement Project was to see if primary care providers are having discussions about advanced directives to Medicare patients 65 and older. The objective of the study is to bring awareness of the possible lack of discussion of advanced directives to the patient population with Medicare who are 65 and older. The project was conducted at a rural clinic in Northeast Arkansas. The data was collected by performing a retrospective chart audit of 50 charts that was chosen at random from 350 charts. The inclusion criteria consists of ages 65 and older, male or female. Primary insurance was Medicare and was seen in the clinic between January 1st to November 1st, 2019. The exclusion criteria was 64 and younger, was seen in the clinic outside the date January 1st to November 1st, 2019, and primary insurance was not Medicare. The findings revealed only 14% of the patients' charts had CPT code 99497, indicating the provider had a discussion of advanced directives with the patient. The findings reveal what the literature review predicted. The results revealed support the findings that there's a lack of discussion and completion of advanced directives. The benefits of the study brought awareness to the site and the need to improve the discussion about advanced directives with Medicare patients. After discussing with the office manager, I suggested placing a reminder in the chart of Medicare patients with chronic diseases about talking about advanced directives. This would be a minimal cost, and the office manager says she would have to speak to the providers for making the change. There were limitations to the study because it only consisted of 50 charts in one clinic, so it does not reveal a true number of the population in Northeast Arkansas. APRNs can help increase the number of patients with advanced directives by asking them of their wishes if something were to happen. This gives the opportunity for the patient to have their end-of-life wishes protected and decreases unwanted stress of family making decisions for their loved ones.
And that was Philip Stokes. Next, Thomas Shelton with a presentation, Tobacco Use Counseling Rates in Adult Tobacco Users Within a Local Arkansas Primary Care Clinic.
According to the CDC, tobacco use is the leading cause of preventable disease and premature death in the United States. In Arkansas, nearly 23% of all adults are smokers, with 54% being between the ages of 25 and 64. In Grant County, 18% of adults identify as tobacco users. Healthy People 2020 objectives for tobacco use seek to increase tobacco screening and tobacco cessation interventions in the primary care setting. The purpose of this project was to investigate the clinic's effectiveness in providing tobacco screening and tobacco cessation interventions. The potential revenue gained and lost from cessation counseling was also evaluated. The objectives for the project was 1, to identify tobacco users from non-tobacco users using HCPCS and ICD-10 coding, 2, identify any counseling interventions that were provided using CPT codes. 3, any pharmacological interventions, specifically any prescriptions for varenicline, also known as Chantix, that was prescribed. And last, investigate the amount of lost revenue by not providing cessation counseling. To gather data, a modified algorithm derived from the merit-based incentive payment program for tobacco screening was used. Using the clinic's electronic medical record, identification of patients age 18 and older with at least 2 patient encounters or at least 1 preventative encounter was performed to establish the eligible population. This would be the denominator in the equation. The percentage of patients age 18 years and older who were screened for tobacco use was determined from EMR records. Next, the percentage of patients age 18 and older who were screened identified as tobacco users or non-users was gathered using ICD-10 codes and HCPCS codes. The percentage of patients who were screened identified as tobacco users and received tobacco cessation interventions was calculated from CPT codes 99406 and 99407 and a search for varenicline, also known as Chantix. Data completeness for both screening and cessation interventions was performed using the equation provided in the merit-based incentive program, quality measure packet. For screening, the numerator included patients who were screened and categorized as tobacco users or non-users, patients who were not screened, and any documentation for not screening for tobacco use. The performance rate was determined by dividing the total number of patients recognized as users and non-users by the data completeness numerator minus any documented reasons for not screening. The results show that the clinic was very efficient in screening their patients for tobacco use. The clinic screened 100% of their patients. However, only 52% of the patients had any diagnosis code placed in their chart, that being either identification as a tobacco user or non-user. The clinic only counseled 34% of their tobacco-using patients. The clinic was found to be above the baseline and target goals as set forth by Healthy People 2020. As for revenue, only the fee schedules for Medicare and Medicaid were available for use. Values were calculated, assuming that all patients either had Medicare or Medicaid. Counseling was provided 1,490 times, which generated a potential profit between $21,000 and $30,000. Taking into account the number of patients seen and subtracting the patients who had received counseling, lost revenue for both Medicaid and Medicare was determined. The result of this would be a potential loss from $11,000 to $30,000 to $37,000. In conclusion, the clinic performed above the national benchmarks, even screening 100% of their patients. The clinic could improve their performance by giving the patient a diagnosis code for their tobacco use or non-use. The clinic can increase their revenue by simply providing cessation counseling, even for a minimum of 3 minutes. Providers can aid the patient in quitting and improving their lifestyle by offering cessation medication.
And that was Thomas Shelton. Final presentation is from Morgan Noble with a presentation, An Obesity Screening Rate Analysis in Pediatric Patients Between the Ages of 6 and 18.
I think we would all agree that obesity is a problem in our country that affects all populations, and the pediatric population is no different. This puts these children and adolescents at risk for poor health. The prevalence of obesity is 18.5%, and that translates to about 13.7 million children and adolescents ages 2 through 19. Obese children and adolescents have an increased risk of developing type 2 diabetes, asthma, fatty liver disease, cardiovascular disease, and they may also experience more mental health and psychological issues like depression and low self-esteem. In order to combat these statistics, the United States Preventive Services Task Force recommends that clinicians screen for obesity in children and adolescents 6 years and older and offer or refer them to comprehensive intensive behavioral interventions to promote improvements in weight status. The purpose of this study is to analyze what percentage of children and adolescents ages 6 through 18 are being screened for obesity in a local clinic in Manila, Arkansas. And then if they are overweight or obese? Are they being offered comprehensive, intensive behavioral interventions to promote improvements in their weight status? This is a chart that I found on the CDC website that I found interesting. It kind of goes along with the statistics that I found, and it just shows the prevalence of obesity among youth ages 2 through 19. And this chart goes on and breaks it down by sex and age. And if you will look, you can see that once kids reach 6 years old, from that point as they age, the prevalence of obesity increases. The objective of this study is to analyze the pediatric obesity screening rate of a rural Arkansas clinic with the national screening rates in consideration of the recommendations by the United States Preventive Services Task Force for all children ages 6 through 18. In determining whether the pediatric obesity screening practices at this clinic are better or worse than the national average, providers will be able to gain insight into their current screening practices and provide a reference point that they can utilize to set future goals. Now we're going to talk about the methods I used to obtain this research. First, IRB was obtained through Arkansas State University. The study was conducted using a retrospective chart review, and then 50 charts were reviewed through an EMR in a rural primary care clinic in Mississippi County, Arkansas. A data collection tool was used to gather and record data, and the data collected included age, gender, BMI, whether or not a screening was performed, and if interventions were offered. The population included both male and female patients ages 6 through 18 who visited the clinic between the dates of January 1st, 2017 and November 15th, 2019. Exclusion criteria included patients who were younger than 6 or older than 18. This study found that the rate of obesity screening in a rural clinic in Mississippi County for children ages 6 through 18 is 100%. 34% of the 50 patients that I reviewed were found to be in the obese category. My intention was to compare that percentage to the national screening average, but I was unable to obtain that through my research. Therefore, a comparison could not be made. When we consider the recommendations made by the United States Preventive Services Task Force for these individuals, screening practices of the practitioners at this rural clinic that I was at were found to be satisfactory. However, there is still room for improvement. The study concluded that this clinic screened 100% of their patients. Of the 50 charts that I reviewed, 17 of them were found to be in the obese category. Only 35% of that 17 that were found to be obese were offered comprehensive behavioral intervention. So this leaves significant room for improvement in that aspect of the recommendations. The acknowledgments we've already mentioned, and then the references are here on the bottom right.
And that was Morgan Noble. Well, this is the 99th episode of the Created State Podcast. So, of course, next week we're going to have a special 100th episode as we'll have a reflection, just kind of reminiscing, looking back at some of the previous episodes, including we're going to actually play back one of the most popular episodes that we've had over the past 99 episodes of the podcast. We'll play back one of the most popular ones next week. That will be aired as part of our 100th episode celebration of the Create at State Podcast. To hear more of the Created State Podcast, you can always subscribe to the podcast at the Created State Podcast page on KASU.org. It's also available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play. Basically, wherever you get your podcast, you can search for the Created State Podcast and A-State Connections. Tell others about the Created State Podcast. Also, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. That helps us be able to get this out to more ears. We'd always love to hear from you. Just email me, jreaves, that's J-R-E-A-V-E-S, at astate.edu. You're listening to A-State Connections on KASU.